Welcome back to a special edition of Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We've been listening back to some of the most interesting conversations this year. We close with a discovery that is millennia in the making. More than 30 years ago, construction workers unearthed something unusual while building new homes in Placer County's Granite Bay neighborhood. They discovered a fossilized plant buried for eons. The ancient plant was collected by researchers at Sierra College and preserved in its Natural History Museum in Rockland. And there it sat for decades, and only recently has its scientific significance been realized. A curious professor from the University of Kansas took a closer look at the fossil, and after careful examination, released a study suggesting this discovery has helped close a critical gap in the fossil record. It reveals the ancestors of an incredibly diverse family of flowering plants that we all enjoy today, including close relatives of coffee and potatoes, which evolved during the last days of the dinosaurs. I sat down with Richard Hilton, professor of earth sciences at Sierra College, and Brian Atkinson, assistant professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Kansas, about really a fascinating story of this fossil, tens of millions of years in the making. So I want to get a little 101 on each of you. Why did each of you pursue careers in paleobotany and earth sciences? Professor Hilton, I'll start with you.
Well, I started out to be a biologist, but ended up changing in my junior year to geology. And then it's led me ultimately to paleontology, the study of life on Earth in the past. Mm.
And how about you, Professor Atkinson?
Great question. So I started out in undergraduate college as a plant biology major. And paleobotany was not on my radar until much later in my college career. And I saw a talk given by a paleobotanist about his name is Gar Rothwell. Is Gar Rothwell, he's still around. And he gave a talk about how fossil plants can inform understanding of how plants evolved in time. And it made so much sense to me. I asked if I can do a research project with them, and it was a wrap after that. So,
And the rest is, pun intended, history, right? Taking a look back and now leading to this moment now. So, Professor Hilton, you're part of a discovery that was really like tens of millions of years in the making. So let's take that baby step back in time to the 1990s. What were the sequence of events that led to this fossil discovery and how you ultimately became involved?
Well, I was teaching at Sierra College at the time and with the Sierra College Natural History Museum. And I got a phone call from a local fireman by the name of Pat Antuzzi. And he said he'd found what he thought was a dinosaur bone. And I'm going, yeah, right. No dinosaurs around here. Anyway, I went to see him, and he pulled out this fossil. And it was a bone, and it was from the Chico Formation, which puts it in the Mesozoic, the time of dinosaurs. And he said, I think it's a dinosaur. And I said to him, I think you're right, but I can't prove it. So I contacted Berkeley, a guy named Greg Erickson. He did some science on it, and he agreed that it was a dinosaur. And not only a dinosaur, but a young dinosaur. So we started looking, and they were doing houses at the time and digging deep ditches for the piping and so forth, the storm drains. And coming out of these ditches was all kinds of fossils from the ocean. It was an ocean setting. But we were also getting fossils from the land, both plants and animals.
I mean, you're talking that this was, at that time, an ocean setting. So kind of take us back to that time when this fossil was alive. What would we see if we took a walk around this landscape, which is now a largely suburb area in the foothills, like 70, 80 million years ago?
70, 80 million years ago, the original Sierra Nevada was much bigger than the one we have today and extended far to the east and was capped by volcanoes. What was happening in the Mesozoic time of the dinosaurs is Pangaea was breaking up, the supercontinent. And this is about plate tectonics, the fact that the crust of the Earth moves around in plates. And the Americas were moving away from Europe and Africa and opening Atlantic Ocean. and that was closing the Pacific Ocean. By 82 million years ago, that original mountain range had eroded away. You know, miles of rock had eroded away and was deposited offshore in the valley here. And the ocean probably went as far east as maybe Colfax.
Wow.
At the time.
And that's like a, you know, on a good day, like a 2 hour, little over 2 hour drive from what is the ocean now, like in the Bay Area. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah, easily 2 hours. So there was no coast range. There was just, you know, a continental shelf where most of these fossils are being deposited.
Wow. Well, okay. So now, Professor Atkinson, that brings me to you because you're based in Kansas. When did you come into the picture to really understand the significance of this fossil decades later?
Great question, Vicky. So this all kind of goes back. Much of my PhD work when I was a student in grad school involved this collecting and describing Cretaceous plants. And by Cretaceous, I mean anywhere between 145 to 66 million years ago. So this is like the last hurrah of the dinosaurs. I wanted to learn more by looking at different, basically, localities or fossil deposits along the West Coast. And this region is actually surprisingly under-sampled or under-collected for this interval of time, for plants, that is. Somebody had told me to get in touch with a professor at Chico State, Russell Shapiro, who told me then to get in contact with Richard Hilton, who had collected all these fossil plants from Granite Bay. And so I did. And, you know, I was expecting to see some cool stuff. And then when they pulled some drawers out, I was blown away. It was some of like the best Cretaceous plant material that I've ever seen. It's like the fruits and seeds that were in there are three-dimensionally preserved, sometimes down to the cellular level. And it's like they were just dropped like yesterday. So it's like exceptional preservation. And I was just, I will forever remain grateful for Richard and Patrick for collecting that material.
We had a ball doing that.
I bet you did. Yeah.
I can imagine. So Professor Atkinson, you were very impressed by what you discovered at Sierra College, and you, and your wheelhouse is paleobotany. I'm just curious, why is this fossil so significant, and how does it help fill in the gaps in the fossil record?
Yeah, that's a great question, Vicky. So what this particular fossil is called Paleophytocrene chicoensis, chicoensis being named after the Chico Formation from where it came from. And the genus Paleophytocrene belongs to this family called Icacinaceae, which today is typically only found in the tropics. Icacinaceae is part of this really diverse group of plants called the lamiates. And by diverse, I mean lots of species. We're talking about 40,000 species of flowering plants that include some of the crops that our livelihoods and economy depend on, like coffee, potatoes, tomatoes, those sorts of things. And that diverse group of lamiates really doesn't have a fossil record in the Cretaceous period prior to my work, at least solid evidence. And I just felt like they had to be around. And it's been taking me about 7 years to find this. And so now we have kind of like this missing piece of the puzzle. There's still a lot more work to do, but this was a major, really critical step forward. And it was quite validating too. I was like, has there.
Yeah, I can imagine. And 7 years is a long time for an individual, but in the context of this conversation, it's just like not even a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think about how, I mean, we know what happened to the dinosaurs, that there are periods that can just wipe out species. But yet, you know, this plant species that was essentially fossilized, you know, we can still see it in some respect millennia, eons later.
Yeah, plants are pretty tough. Like, they fare pretty well when it comes to mass extinction events. And that's partly due to, like, how they live. Like, seeds are long-lasting and so forth. So, like, if you just wait a little while, they'll come back.
And that goes back to the Chico Formation that you were talking about, Professor Hilton. How large of an area are we talking about?
Chico Formation is kind of intermittent along the east side of the valley from, about Stockton or a little farther south, all the way up to Red Bluff and Redding. And it's full of fossils. I mean, we find lots of invertebrates, bivalves, clams and oysters, gastropods, snails. We find sea urchins, starfish, crinoids. These are related to sea urchins that live on a stem. They're animals. But lots of vertebrates as well. There's been several types of shark and other fish. We have a mosasaur called Cladastes, which we found right here in Granite Bay. This is a seagoing veranded lizard, so related to the Komodo dragon. Three types of marine turtles, and the one dinosaur. In other areas of the Chico Formation, there have been pterosaur remains found and birds, and one mammal. The mammals were evolving in the Mesozoic along with these plants.
You know, how has this fossil, this recent one, helped shape what you teach in the classroom, Professor Hilton? It's pretty cool. You know, it got a lot of interest from the surrounding community.
Well, I mainly do field classes now. But field classes in the past, we used to go to Montana and Wyoming and Arizona. We would have dinosaur digs. So it's really neat in a community college to get students out in the field. And it changes their lives and their outlook of the history, the deep history of our planet.
Yeah, and it could be right under our feet. We don't even have to travel that far, right? What goes into preserving a fossil? I mean, you took part in this in the 90s for the fossil we're talking about today.
Well, it depends on the fossils. You know, some you just collect and keep them dry and, you know, glue things back together. But other fossils, you know, when we go out and collect, we've collected two Triceratops skulls and, you know, they don't come out of the rock just whole. I mean, I had a Triceratops skull on my kitchen counter for 2 years.
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
Assembling all the pieces together to finally get it good enough for display purposes. You know, I've been working on some fossils down here at Ione, and we just did a jaw, for example, of a four-tusked elephant, a gomphothere. And you have to pedestal all around the fossil, dig down, and then it's burlap and plaster on the top, and then you dig under it, and then eventually you dig under it far enough that you can break it off, and you bring the whole fossil with the rock. And then once you get it in the lab, it's the slow, steady, you know, exhuming of this fossil and, you know, impregnating it with chemicals that will preserve it sometimes. But that's a lot of work. So some of them you just bring to the museum, they're already ready to go. Some of them you spend years and everything in between.
A lot of work, but
of
I
work,
also
but
think
work,
I was
yeah.
I was just going to say, it still seems like a lot of fun for you.
Yeah, we have these giant jigsaw three-dimensional puzzles, you know, that we put together. It's a whole lot of fun.
I think that may be the first and only time I'll have someone tell me that they had a Triceratops skull on their in their home on their table. I mean, dinosaur bones, skeletons, as we're talking about, I mean, they're always a big hit when you go to natural history museums. But why do you believe plant fossils are fascinating, and how do they help us better understand prehistoric life on Earth?
Yeah, well, you're looking at a paleo environment here. You're looking at the diversity of all the life. And what's nice about the Granite Bay fossils is we had fossils from the land. So looking at all the plants and looking at some of the animals, you get an idea of the diversity that's going on. You can start to form a picture. I kind of think of it as looking through a keyhole to the past. You've only got the keyhole, and you just hope that that keyhole gets a little larger and you discover more fossils to make it even more diverse and interesting. But you're looking at the past. It's incredible.
Professors Hilton and Atkinson, thank you for the time and the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on.
That's my conversation with Richard Hilton, professor of earth sciences at Sierra College, and Brian Atkinson, assistant professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Kansas, who shared the fascinating story of a Granite Bay fossil and how it helped close a significant gap in the fossil record. That's it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, email us, insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Carell Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineers are Antonio Munez and Chris Feltz. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.